Welcome to the Skokie Kolo Podcast. Here you can listen to recent shiurim given by members of the Kolo and special guests who spoke at the Kolo. For older shiurim, open the Learn tab above and select Audio Archive.
My name is Yirmiyahu Newman. I would like to share an insight regarding the holiday of Sukkot. There's a medrash that says that the reason Sukkot falls out after Yom Kippur is because we are afraid that perhaps the judgment on Yom Kippur came out against us, and therefore we're obligated to go into galus, to go into exile. So to fix that verdict on ourselves, we go into the sukkah to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are putting ourselves into exile. It's a self-inflicted exile to cover any judgment on us that is a result of Yom Kippur. That is the Medrash Yalkut Shimoni that says that. The Sifsei Chaim, Rav Chaim Freelander, explains Pshat in this Medrash. He explains that the source for all sin is gaiva, conceitedness, or arrogance. That's the root of all sin. If a person would realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there and is watching everything that he or she does, a person wouldn't sin. That which we sin is a product of the fact that we don't recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence, because there's a certain arrogance that we feel, a certain gaiva that we feel, that we're in charge of everything and we can do what we want, we have all the power. That lack of humility is the source of all sin. Explains the Sifsei Chaim that when one goes into galus, when one goes into a foreign place in which they're not comfortable, a person becomes humble very quickly, because when one is out of their element, they realize that they're not in control, they don't feel comfortable, and they become humble very quickly. Thus, the tikkun for gaiva is exile. So the sukkah serves as a sort of exile. So we're afraid that the din came out on Yom Kippur, that we're chayev, that chas v'shalom we were guilty. It didn't come out a good verdict. We're chayev galus. So we say, you know what, instead of going to a real type of exile to make things very difficult in ourselves, what I'll do is I'll go into the sukkah. On Sukkot, I'll sit in an uncomfortable environment outside, maybe some bees, some bugs, whatever it is. It might get a little chilly. Nothing to make myself putter from sukkah, but it's not a perfect circumstance. And that will serve as the exile. That will humble me. That will allow myself to have a proper perspective of humility. And that will serve as a tikkun for the din that came about on Yom Kippur of our guilt. We find the same concept by Ir Miklat. When someone kills accidentally, they run to a city of refuge. The Gemara calls it galus, it's exile. One can say that the reason someone kills accidentally is because there was a certain element of gaiva, of arrogance. Because when one kills accidentally, b'shogeg, there's a level of negligence there. A person's climbing down a rickety ladder and a ring breaks and he falls and onto someone and kills them. That was a lack of awareness that you have a rickety ladder, there are people walking below, and I could cause danger to them. That lack of thinking, that level of negligence is a certain amount of arrogance that I'm not concerned for other people, I don't have to worry about other people, it's all about me. So the tikkun, the way to remedy that attitude is to go into galus, to go to Eir Miklat. So that is the concept of galus, and that is one of the ideas of sitting in a sukkah. It is a expression of exile, self-exile, to be mesaken whatever we need to be mesaken after Yom Kippur.
Hello, my name is Ari Sandek. Over the Yomtov of Sukkot, in Berchas Hamazon, we say, Harachaman hu yakim lanu es sukkas David hanofalas. A tefillah that Hashem should erect for us the Malchus of David HaMelech. This comes from a pasuk in Amos, Perek Tes, pasuk Yud Aleph, where it says, Bayamahu, on that day, Akim es sukkas David hanofalas, I will erect the fallen sukkah of David. And as the Targum explains, this refers to Malchusa de Beis David, David's kingdom. It seems strange. We know that a sukkah is a temporary structure. Halachically, it cannot be a structure of permanence. Malchus Beis David, the kingdom of David HaMalach, is eternal. It lasts forever, and it will hopefully soon continue. Of all things, why would we compare Malchus Beis David to a fallen sukkah? And to strengthen the question, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin on the bottom of Tzadivav Amun Beis, where it says, Amar le Rav Nachman Rabbi Yitzchak, Rav Nachman asked Rabbi Yitzchak, Mishmielach emas asi bar nafli. Do you know when bar nafli is going to come? Who's that? Amar le man bar nafli. Who is bar nafli? Amar le Mashiach. Bar nafli is Mashiach. Mashiach bar nafli kares le. Rav Yitzchak asked, do you call Mashiach bar nafli? The son of the fallen one? Amar le in, yes. Dixiv, as the Pasuk says, same one, Vayomahu Akim as Sukkas David Hanofalas, and that day I will erect the fallen Sukkah of David. So Mashiach is being referred to here as the son of the fallen one based on this Pasuk. But again, why of all things we would refer to something so permanent like the kingdom of David HaMelech as a fallen Sukkah? The Maharal asks this question in his Sefer Netzach Yisrael, and he provides the following insight, that although on the one hand a sukkah is a temporary structure, when that sukkah falls down or comes down or is put away from year to year, it's not a new sukkah that you are building or putting up. It's that same sukkah. When it comes to a house, on the other hand, if a house is destroyed or falls down, you're not propping up the same house. That's a new house entirely. So too, when Malchus Beis David continues, it is not something new. It's not a new dynasty. It's picking up the pieces. It's a continuation of the same Malchus. Rav Moshe Chaim Sosevsky, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Or Yerushalayim, in his Sefer B'Shalim Sukkah Ar Masach HaSukkah, in his introduction, brings out the same point without quoting the Maharal, just quoting Halachos from the Gemara. In Bab Metzia, in the end of Parak HaShoel, the halacha is, if a person rents a house, hamaskir bayis l'chavero, v'nafal, and the house falls down, chayav l'hamid lo bayis, you have to rebuild him a house. And the Gemara there discusses, what is the case? If I lent you bayis zeh, if the way I phrased it was, I'm lending you this house, nafal, azdale, if that house falls, it is gone. That house is no longer there. Meaning a bayis, a house, even though it was strong and mighty, if it falls, you can't pick up that house again. Azdale, it's gone. If anything, there's a new house. When it comes to a sukkah, on the other hand, the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Kav Zayin Amud Beis, where there's a machlokes about how permanent the sukkah can be. Can you rebuild a sukkah on Chol Moed? Can you build a sukkah on Chol Moed? The Gemara says, everyone agrees, V'shavin sh'im nafla shechozer ubona osa b'chol Shel Moed. If a sukkah falls, you can build it again on Chol Moed. Mao de tema, the Gemara continues, you might have thought, hai achri sihi, this is a new sukkah and not one that was there for all 7 days. Kamashmla, no. When you pick up a sukkah, it's not a new sukkah. It's the same sukkah. Meaning, again, this idea that a sukkah, when you put it away, or when it falls down, is not gone. It is that same sukkah. And so too, Malchus Beis David is not gone. Rather, we simply need to pick up the pieces, but it will soon continue with the same dynasty. Now, the truth is, it's not so simple that Sukkas David HaNofalas refers to the dynasty of David HaMelech. According to the Medrash Tehillim and according to the Mahari Kra and that Pasuk in Amos, it refers to the Beis HaMikdash, that the fallen Sukkah of David refers to the Beis HaMikdash. But really, these two explanations are linked, because the Malchus of David and his descendants is really a representation of the Malchus of Hashem. The Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perak Yedayin Pasuk Yedaled, when talking about how David HaMelech's descendants will continue his kingdom, it says, V'ha'amadtihu beveisi uvimalchusi ad olam. Hashem says, I shall put him in my house and in my kingdom forever. V'chiso yanachon ad olam. And his throne will be forever. Meaning Hashem refers here to Malchus Beis David as Malchusi, my kingdom in my house. And it's apropos, because just like the Shekhinah and Hashem's Kisei is forever, therefore David and his descendants who represent that Kisei of Hashem last forever. Therefore, regarding why we say this tefillah, especially on Sukkot, well, it could just be because we're mentioning the word Sukkos and it's Sukkos, but more likely, it's the connection that Sukkot has with the coming of Mashiach and what is going to happen in the Asid Lava. We should all be Zocha very soon to see the erecting of Sukkos David Hanofalas with the coming of Bar Nafli Mashiach. Have a great Yom Tov.
Hello, this is Noah Baron, and I would like to share with you a Dvar Torah about Sukkos. You and your spouse and your children have been working very hard the past couple of weeks preparing for Sukkos. You bought the most beautiful lulav and esrog, hadar of the hadar. You built your sukkah, took you hours and hours with your sons and daughters, and you struggled and you put it up and it's magnificent. You and your wife both cooked hours and hours, making sure everything was ready, the gefilte fish and the meat and the chicken. Everything is perfect. You set the table in the sukkah with your finest dishes, which is what we are all supposed to do. You come home from shul, you say, let's get in the sukkah, let's start already. You go in, you're about to start kiddush, and it starts raining. Pouring rain comes into the sukkah. What do? Do you make kiddush in the sukkah while it's raining and eat some bread, some challah? Or are you putter from eating in the sukkah? The Ramah actually says in Siman Tov Reish Lamed Tes, you're going to make kiddush in the sukkah while it's raining. And the Mishnah Berurah explains why. Don't we say that normally if it's raining, you're putter, you're exempt from singing the sukkah? Mitztayer, putter min ha-sukkah, somebody who is in distress. It's too freezing cold, it's too hot, there's too many mosquitoes, or it's raining, is exempt from eating in the sukkah. So why all of a sudden does the Ramah say on the first night, you should go ahead and make kiddush and eat in the sukkah? Well, there is a fundamental difference between the first night of Sukkos and the rest of Sukkos. The rest of Sukkos, if you don't want to eat a meal, you don't want to eat bread or mezonos, and you don't want to sleep, so then you don't have to go into the sukkah. If you don't want to eat, okay, then you don't go in the sukkah. But on the first night, there is a chiyuv, an obligation to eat in the sukkah. Even if you don't want to, you have to go in the sukkah and eat a kezayis, because there's a gezer shava between Pesach and Sukkos. They both say chamisha asar, and therefore we learn a gezer shava. Just like you have to eat a kezayis of matzah on the first night of Pesach, you also have to eat a kezayis of bread in the sukkah on the first night of Sukkos. In fact, normally, even the rest of Sukkos, only if you plan on eating a kebeya, an egg's worth of bread, do you make the bracha of leisha if you're potter from singing the sukkah unless you are eating an egg's worth or more, and you only make the leisha of a sukkah if you're eating an egg's worth or more. But on the first night, because of this gezer shavah, therefore, even if you're just eating a kezayis, which is only half the size of a beya, you're going to make the leisha if you don't need to eat a whole kebeya. Now, there's a machlokes rishonim, but the Mishnah Berurah points out that the Ramah holds, like the rishonim that say, that the gezer shavah beats out the exemption of Mitztayer, right? We know Mitztayer is potter from the sukkah, but the Gezer Shava tells you that on the first night, you have to eat a kezayis no matter what. I don't care if you're Mitztayer. There's no p'tur of Mitztayer on the first night. There's no exemption of being in distress on the first night, and therefore you would go ahead and eat in the sukkah while it's raining. However, the Mishnah Berurah points out that there are many Rishonim who don't hold that way. They hold that Mitztayer is potter min ha-sukkah all the time, even in the first night. It's actually a machlokes Rishonim. And actually, most Rishonim do not go like the Ramah. Most Rishonim say that you're indeed potter even on the first night. So the Mishnah Berurah says, in deference to those other Rishonim, even though you're going to make Kiddush and eat a kezayis of bread in the sukkah while it's raining, you're not going to make the leishiv. Because according to the Rishonim, that Mistar is still potter on the first night, so you're potter. You can't make the bracha of leishiv. If you're potter, that'll be called a bracha lebatala. So the Mishnah Berurah says that actually the best thing to do is actually wait. If it starts raining, you're about to make Kiddush for your whole family, and it starts raining, you should actually go back inside and wait. How long should you wait? Until it stops raining. If it stops raining, now you can go back out and be yotze according to everybody. Everybody will hold now that you're chayiv because it's not raining. How long, let's say it keeps raining and you're waiting and waiting. So Mishnah Berurah says, don't wait until chatzos. Don't wait past midnight. That's too late. And in fact, if you're hungry and especially if you have guests, you should not wait too long. At most an hour or two. But if you have guests, really, you should not wait at all because they're hungry. They're expecting a meal and you're not giving it to them. Okay, let's say you waited in half an hour, an hour, but your wife's nagging you. Your kids are saying, come on, Tati, we're hungry. Okay, go in to the sukkah. You're going to make Kiddush, and you will eat a kezayis of pas, kezayis of bread, and you'll go back inside. You're not going to make the leishiv just in case you are indeed potter when it's raining, and you don't want to make a bracha with all, so you're not going to make the leishiv. You will make the shechiyonu, because the shechiyonu is on two things. It's on number one, it's on the Kedushas Yontiv, which of course, I don't care if it's raining or not, there's Kedushas Yontiv, and it's also on the Mitzvah of Sukkah. And even if you are actually potter from Sukkah now, you could actually make the Shechiyonu on the Mitzvah of Sukkah, even though you're not doing the Mitzvah of Sukkah, because you're in the Sukkah, you're near the Sukkah, it's fine, you can even make it actually while you're building it, before Sukkah even starts, you can make Shechiyonu officially. We wait, but Lamaisa, even if you're not being Yaitse right now, because we hold that you're potter while it's raining, you can still make the Shechiyonu. So Avada, you make the Shechiyonu inside, but you will not make the Leishiv. Okay, to make sure you're Yaitse according to the Shittos that you're Chayiv, you'll eat the one Kezayis, and then you'll go inside and eat the rest of your meal inside. Okay, then you benched, and before you went to sleep, 20 minutes later or half an hour later, guess what? It stops raining. So Mishnah Berurah says, even though you already benched, but remember, more than half the Rishonim say that Misar is potter even on the first night. In which case, when you ate in the sukkah while it was raining, guess what? You weren't Yotze. You weren't Yotze Yerchiv based on the Gezeirah Shel because you were potter at that point. Now that it stopped raining, you're going to have to go back out into the sukkah. And this time you're going to have to eat a kibbetza because the Rishonim who say that you're already Yotze, now you can only make a bracha if you're eating a kibbetza. So you have to go back, make a leishev and eat a kebeya, and then bench again. However, if you already went to sleep and then it stopped raining, then you would not have to go back in the sukkah because mimonoshach, either way, you're going to be potter. If mistar is chayiv in sukkah, well then you were yotze the first time when he did it while it was raining. If mistar is potter min sukkah, well it's called sar to have to get out of your bed to go into the sukkah, and therefore, even though it stopped raining, but once you're in bed, you're going to be potter, you won't have to go back out a second time. But if it stopped raining before you went to bed, you're going to have to go back out to be yotze all the shitos, make a leishev, and eat a kebeya. We said before that in the beginning of the night when it was raining, you're going to make kiddush and eat a kezayis in the sukkah. Why? Why don't I make kiddush in the house, eat there, and then hopefully by the end of the meal it'll stop raining and I'll go in the sukkah. And if it doesn't stop raining, then I'll go out at the end of the meal and I'll eat a kezayis in the sukkah. Why am I making kiddush in the sukkah? Eat the last kezayis. Why the first kezayis? So the Mishnah Berurah explains that, well, the shechiyonu, remember, is going on both things. It's supposed to be going on the mitzvah of sukkah and on the kedushas yontiv. If you say the bracha in the house, it's only going to cover the kedushas yontiv. It will not cover the sukkah if you're in the house. And therefore, when you go out later to the sukkah, you have to make another shechiyonu. Two shechiyonus, which is not a bracha levatala because each one is for something, but we try not to increase brachos unnecessarily. If you make kiddush in the beginning, you can make shechiyonu and cover both. If you say in the sukkah in the beginning, make kiddush in the sukkah while it's raining, you can say shechiyonu which cover both. If you first make kiddush in the house and only later go out to the sukkah, your shechiyonu when you did kiddush will only cover the kedushas yontiv, and you have to make a second shechiyonu when you go back into the sukkah. But the Ramah says, guess what? On the second night, if it's raining, well, you already made the Shechiyonu in the sukkah on the first night. So the Shechiyonu on the second night really is only going on Kedushas Yontiv. So therefore, on the second night, it would not be a problem. Actually, if it's raining on the second night, you can make Kiddush in the house, make a Shechianu, which is only going on the Kiddushas Yontiv, and later, if it stops raining, at the end of the meal, you eat a Kazayis in the Sukkah, but guess what? You're not going to have to make a Shechianu because you already made a Shechianu on the Sukkah on the first night, and you already made a Shechianu on the Kiddushas Yontiv when you did Kiddush in the house. Okay, that was a little complicated, but just to sum up the practical halacha, on the first night, you're going to wait a little bit to see if it stops raining, but if it doesn't, you're going to go into Sukkah and make Kiddush with the Shechianu, both out of Leishev, and eat a Kazayis. If it's still raining, you're going to go back inside. At any point, if it stops raining, unless you already went to sleep, but if it stops raining before you went to sleep, you're going to go back into the Sukkah, make a Leishev, and eat a Kabeya, and you're done. If you already went to sleep and it stops raining, you don't have to go back out. On the second night, though, if it's raining, you're going to first make Kiddush in the house and eat most of your meal, and then you'll save the last Kazayis to eat in the Sukkah. If it's still raining, when you eat that Kazayis in the Sukkah, you're not going to make the Leishev. And if it later stops raining in the night, again, you're going to go back in the Sukkah and then make a Leishev and eat a Kabeya. I hope that was all clear. You might have to listen to it a couple times to get the whole thing. But have a wonderful Yontev, and hopefully this Shiloh will not be Lemaisa. Hopefully, it will not rain on either the first two nights of Sukkot, or at all.
Hello, my name is Dovi Turkeltaub, and I'd like to share with you a Devar Torah on the Yom Tov of Sukkot. The Gemara tells us in Edorim that when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to take out the sun from its casing, minartika, asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lahoitzi chamu minartika. Hashem is going to take out its sun from its casing, and with this, the tzaddikim will be healed with it, or shenim deinim bo, and the wicked people will be judged by it. So says the Chassam Sofer, he says, what does this mean that Hashem takes out the chamu minartika? So he says, the chamu is represented by a kiddush al yoyna, a special holiness. And when that holiness that the Chama has, it has the healing power. But the reason why it can't serve as a healing, because it has an outer casing that stops the sun from fully utilizing its koyach, its power, to be a healer. And he says, on the other hand, this casing itself has the ability to damage someone. The only reason why it doesn't cause damage is because it has together mixed in it, so to speak, the sun, which has the healing process powers, which as the combination serves to offset each other. The nartika, the casing, holds back the healing powers of the sun, and the healing powers of the sun is held back by the casing. He says, therefore, when Mashiach comes, la'os lavoi, when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to separate the two things. He's going to take out the sun, which is purely Kedusha, which is purely holy, and He's going to shine it on the Tzaddikim. Therefore, the Tzaddikim will bask in that pure sun without the casing. As opposed to the Rishayim, they'll have the effect of the Nartika, of the casing, which has the damaging ability, without having that ability of the sun to serve as a healer. Now, where do we see that the sun has these two qualities, that it has on one hand the healing quality and it has the damaging quality? Says Chassam Sofer, if we take the word chama, ches, mem, hey, and we take the nartika, the casing of it, what does that mean, the casing? As we know, every one of the aleph beis has the word itself and the word that makes the letter itself. Every one of the aleph beis has the letter itself and the word that makes up the letter. For example, Aleph is Aleph, Lamed, Fe. It says, if you take the three letters of Chama, Ches, Mem, He, and you take, spell out the hidden words of Ches, Mem, He, you're remained with a Yud, Saf, Mem, and He, which spell out Misa. It means the Chama itself is one aspect, and then the hidden aspect is the Misa. So when you separate the Chama and Artika, you're left with two aspects. You're left with the Chama, with the sun, and on the other hand, you're left with Mem Yud Sof Hey. That's what the Gemara means when it says, when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to separate that Chama and Artika, the the chamo will remain for the righteous ones, and then Artika, which he says is the mem yutzaf hei, will be with what the wicked people will be judged by. And he says, if we take these letters, ches mem hei, they're represented by the mitzvah of sukkah. Why? He says, there's three criteria in order to have a kosher sukkah. One is that it has to have three walls. He says, the three walls is represented by the letter ches, which is three walls. And he says, what's the significance of ches? He says, the ches represents, like the Gemara in Menachos tells us, that Hashem lives b'rumoy shel olam. Hashem's presence is over the whole world. Therefore, when a person's sitting in the sukkah, he attaches himself to that letter ches, that ability that Hashem spreads himself over the whole world. The next letter is mem. Mem represents a kosher sukkah that has all four walls. And what does the mem represent? Mem represents a tzaddik who is enclosed within the shades of Hashem. It means he's confined totally by Hashem. Wherever he goes, wherever he is walking, he's walking together with Hashem. So when a person sits in the sukkah, he also has that mem, that ability to enclose himself fully with Hashem. And if a person doesn't have these ches or the mem, he still has the hay. What's the hay represent? The minimum amount to have a kosher sukkah is to have two walls, a separation, and then a tefach, then a small little bit, which looks exactly like a hay. And what does a hay represent? A hay represents a bal tshuva, someone that didn't do what he's supposed to do, and he always has that ability to jump back in. As the Gemara tells us, why is the hay open from both ends? Because if a person falls through the bottom, he always has the ability to climb back up and re-enter. He says that's what the sukkah represents. This ches mem hay, this chamo, this ability to realize and appreciate that you're sitting with Hashem, that you're enclosed, you're in the shade of Hashem, and that even if things don't go as they're supposed to, you can always climb back up and re-enter. And that's what we have to appreciate, that when we sit in the sukkah, that we have these qualities. And these qualities are what's going to heal us, is what's going to be expressed in the time of Mashiach. And with that, this Chasam Sofer, I thought we can explain another Gemara. Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that the Goyim are going to request a mitzvah. They're going to ask Hashem, can you please give us one mitzvah? We feel bad that we didn't accept the Torah. It's a long Gemara. And they said, can you at least give us one mitzvah? The Gemara tells us, Hashem said, I'll give you an easy mitzvah. What was the mitzvah? He gave him the mitzvah sukkah. The Gemara tells us, what did Hashem do? Hashem took the chamam and artika. He took out the sun. The simple way of understanding it is that he made it very, very hot. And they couldn't sit, they couldn't survive that heat of the sukkah. So what did the goyim do? They left the sukkah, and on their way out, they gave it a kick. They gave the sukkah a kick. Hashem says, you see, you couldn't even do a simple mitzvah like sukkah, and you expect to be able to do the other mitzvahs? The question on the Gemara is, it seems very unfair. Once you're giving them a mitzvah, let them try to fulfill the mitzvah. Why did you have to make that it should be a hot day? Why did you have to be moitzi chama menatika? Why did you have to take the sun out of its casing? Just leave it and make it the normal weather. I think the answer is based on this Chasam Sofer. What Hashem was trying to show the nations of the world, he says he was trying to show them what the special qualities that the sukkah has that only the Kal Yisrael can appreciate. He took the chamo, he took the ches mem hei out of its casing, and he showed them, you know what the mitzvah of sukkah represents? Is it something that you have the ability to do? It's the ches, the ability to be together with Hashem, the mem, to sit in the shadows of Hashem, the hei, that ability to do tshuva. And they realized with disgust, no, they don't have that ability. So they gave the sukkah a kick, and they realized, we don't have that benefit of having that ches, that mem, and the hay. They realized that the Torah belongs to the Jews. They don't have any connection to that holiness of the mitzvah of sukkah. So as we're getting ready for the Yom Tov of sukkah, we're getting ready to appreciate the mitzvah of sukkah. Let's bask, enjoy every second that we have that ability to enter that sukkah, enter the confines of Hashem. Let's enjoy every second and realize that for the few minutes we're entering Mashiach times. And let's hope, in the honor of the mitzvah of Sukkah, in honor of basking in the glory of Hashem, we'll once again be zoiche to fully bask in the glory of Hashem, where once again Hashem will take the sun out of its casing, and with that the tzaddikim will be healed, and will be zoiche once again to sit in the Sukkah of Luvyosan together with Mashiach Tzidkenu speedily in our days. Have a great, great Yom Tov.
Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is Eric Goldman, and it is my honor and pleasure to share with you words of Torah for the beautiful Yom Tov of Sukkot. I have a friend who, over the years, has become a little bit of a Baal Tshuva. And more, each year, he's taking upon himself more mitzvos and refraining from doing more aviros. As his family grows, of course, he's even getting more firmer and coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But throughout it all, and all of the strides he's taken forward, there's one thing that he struggles accepting, and that's Lulav and Esrog. And let's face it, it's a very hard concept to understand. We can go through all the different Yom Tovim, even Sukkot itself, why we sit in a sukkah, why do we sit in a hut, why do we blow a ram's horn, why do we eat little crackers on Pesach, why do we stay up late on Shavuos. So many parts of the Moedim as we go through the year are so easy to explain, and therefore such a deep connection that we can make in our lives. But for a Baal Tshuva who's trying to understand, even with accepting, that sometimes there are going to be things that are chukim, that we don't understand the reason for necessarily, even with all of that, the Lulav and Esrog really pushes the boundaries of our imagination. We take some branches and some leaves in one hand, we take a citrus lemon in the other hand, we walk around in a circle, we shake them up, we shake them down, we shake them behind us, we hope not to poke the guy in the eye. What is it all about? And we can learn all the sources, we can try to come up with explanations, but still it's very hard to understand what this mitzvah is truly all about. And so when we were dividing up the topics to put this Sukkot CD together, I chose the topic of Lulav and Esrog specifically with this friend in mind, thinking to myself that I will find an explanation for him, and this is the Dvar Torah that I will share on the CD. And you know what I came up with? Nothing. I looked through a number of sources, through many Divrei Torah sources, through some of the Gemaras and some of the Midrashim. And unfortunately, I don't think I have a good enough explanation for someone who needs to have at least a little bit of an understanding of why am I walking around with a tree and a lemon and shaking them around. And I think in reality, it's a question that we all deal with a little, on some level. What is this mitzvah all about? What are we accomplishing by taking these dalet minim? And so I decided, instead of trying to give an explanation, instead of trying to satisfy this person's curiosity as well as my own curiosity, I would share with everyone a few of the Midrashim and Gemaras that I found to be so powerful, even if they don't necessarily explain the specific idea of why am I carrying around with me a lemon and a tree, but at the very least they show that something powerful is taking place. There's something holy and special that I am accomplishing, and even with not understanding the details of it, I know that it's something amazing. And the first one comes from the Gemara in Sukkah, and Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, where Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Molich u'mevi l'mi sheha'arba ruchos shelo. We take the Lulav and Esrog, we go back and forth to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in control of all four corners, all four directions of the world. And then Ma'ale u'morid, we go up and we go down, l'mi shehashamayim va'aretz shelo, to the one who owns the heavens and the earth. Again, I have no idea why we're taking a lemon and a tree and shaking them, but from the Gemara we're seeing that what we're trying to show is our unquestioning belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who runs this world and who created this world, and is still to this very day watching over that world that he created. The next makor, the next source, is quoted by the Rosh, who quotes a Medrash that says that at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur time, the whole world goes into their judgment, B'nai Yisrael, as well as the Umos HaOlam, as well as the nations of the world. But after the judgment, we don't know who was found to be good, who was found to be bad, who was found to be righteous, and who was found, chas v'shalom, not to be. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Jewish people a mitzvah, the mitzvah of lulav and esrog. So that way, when we take that lulav and esrog, and we shake them around, and we walk around the Beis Knesses, besimcha, it becomes clear and obvious that we know we came out of our judgment zakai. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a good judgment, and the lulav and esrog is the sign of that judgment. And the third medrash is a medrash that's quoted by the Sefer HaRokeach, one of the great Rishonim, who says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Bnei Yisrael to take a lulav and esrog and to shake it up and down and left and right and back and forth. Why? Because when he took us out of Mitzrayim, he shook the mountains all around the world for us as we were leaving Mitzrayim. Now again, I'm not sure what any of these things mean. And I'm sure there are very deep and very powerful lessons we can learn from them. But it still is puzzling. And so maybe we can just contemplate and think about the power of what these Midrashim are telling us. Whether it's in realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shook the mountains when he took us out of Mitzrayim, or it's in realizing that this Luv and Esrog is the sign that we came out of the judgment of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Zakai with HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us we're going to have a good year, or it's shaking the rule of all directions to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the world, which Rav Aaron Cutler in his Sefer Mishnas Rabbi Aaron explains is on the level of saying Kriya Shema, where we have in mind when we say Echad, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king of the world of the seven levels of heaven, and Dalet Echad, the four corners of the world, shaking the lulav is the level of Shema Yisrael Hashem Akein Hashem Echad. And perhaps, maybe, by just thinking about these ideas, even if we don't necessarily fully understand why it has to be the manifestation on a lulav and an esrog, on a lemon and on a tree, but at least we know we are accomplishing something special, and something powerful, and something full of Kedusha. And with that, we should add a full simcha, a full happiness and a joy to the mitzvah that we are performing, and understand that we are accomplishing something truly special. Thank you, and have an amazing Yom Tov.
Hello, this is Ari Burian. And I would like to share with you an idea that relates to the final day of Sukkot, the day of Hoshana Rabbah. And Hoshana Rabbah is the culmination of 7 days of doing Hoshanas, where we march around the shul with our lulav and esrog, saying Hoshana, that Hashem should save us, that we should have rain, that we should have goodness in our year. And on the seventh day, Hoshana Rabbah, which is the great Hoshana, we march around the shul 7 times, repeating these special verses, almost like a choreographed dance, almost like this orchestration. We have our instruments for the avoda, this lulav, and then the arava that we take out, the willow branch. And we move around together in a choreographed group around the shul 7 times. And the final day, if you look at the Ushpizin, the special guests we have each day of Sukkot, of the 7 shepherds, the 7th and final one, according to some opinions, is David HaMelech, King David. And there's a famous story when David, when he was dancing, that when they were bringing the Aaron to Yerushalayim for the first time, he was dancing in front of the Aaron, in front of all the people. And his wife, Michal, saw from outside the window that he was dancing and making himself look a little bit too loose in front of all the people. He's supposed to be the king. He's supposed to be reserved. And she was very bothered by this. And she called him out on it. She said, "What you're doing is wrong." And David responded, "No, this is what I need to do. I need to show the people the proper way to act in front of the Aaron." And what was really this argument going on between the two of them? So the Minchas Elazar explains that Michal was the daughter of the first king, King Shaul. And Shaul was very much convinced that the way you do your avodas Hashem is not in a way that's showing the entire world. We're acting for the cameras. We're acting to get some publicity. You do it's all internal. The way you act towards Hashem should be between you and Hashem. You don't need to bang on the wall for Hashem to hear you. You don't need to scream out for Hashem to hear you. He can hear you even when you're quiet and davening. And so she thought that what David was doing was inappropriate, and maybe he's doing it only for the outside, and it wasn't anything for him and his avodas Hashem, just for the cameras and for the publicity. So what David was answering her, the Minchas Elazar says, is that it's true, you can't tell exactly why you're doing something if you do it in such a public way. But if you do it in a public way, it's possible to teach others how to act. This is for the matter of chinuch, for the matter of demonstrating to the entire generation how you should act in front of the Aaron, the emotions you should feel. I needed to do it in an external way. It's true, it might be that my internality will never be known, that I do this completely for the right reasons, but I'm given the opportunity to teach others how to act. I need to go and do it in a demonstrative kind of way. And the Gemara says that because of this mistake that Michal made, arguing with David, she didn't have children until the day she died. They point out from Divrei Yamim, there's a pasuk that she did have a child, but the child was born on the day that she died. She died in childbirth, but for many years she lived without children. So the Minchas Elazar says she realized what she did with this argument between her and David must have been right, because she was not having children. And so the Gemara says that she actually put on tefillin and put on tzitzis and did other demonstrative things, which are the things we often don't see in our generation, even in their generation. It's not something we see women doing. In the halacha, it's not something women are supposed to do. But she did it because she realized she had made a mistake. And sometimes you need to act in a demonstrative way to teach other people the way to act. And the message here, I think we can learn, is that sometimes we need to act not in a way to teach others, but in a way just to teach ourselves. We need to get excited about doing a mitzvah. We need to go overboard about doing a mitzvah sometimes, just so we can teach ourselves how valuable that mitzvah is. We need to walk around the shul 7 times and sing a Hoshana and beat willow branches against the ground and do so many different external acts, not just to teach the world how important these mitzvahs are, but teach ourselves how important these mitzvahs are. And I heard a beautiful story relating to this from the Slonim Rebbe, the Nesiva Shalom. He was at his tish on Friday night, and there was a man who nobody recognized walked into the room. He clearly wasn't a chassid. And the Slonim Rebbe looked at him and was fixated on him. And everyone looked over to see who this man was. And he looked like a regular guy. He was a Jewish man who walked in off the street. And the Rebbe was entranced. He said, "I see a glow coming from your face. You must have done something that warranted this glow." And the man said, no, I didn't do anything." And the Rebbe said, "Please, come tell me something. Tell me in private." So the man felt pressured to tell the Rebbe. So they met over on the side in private. And he said, "I did do something that maybe you would see as amazing." He said, "I'm a soldier in the Israeli army. We were in an army base way out in the distance, in the woods, in the fields, in the mountains. But there was a Jewish city nearby. And it was the first night of Sukkot. And I asked the general, I said, could I leave for half an hour just to run really quickly to the neighboring village and eat in the sukkah, just eat one kazayas of bread. I'll say the bracha, I'll do the mitzvah of eating in the sukkah, and I'll come right back. I just need half an hour. I'll take it for my dinner time." And the general said, "Oh, you're just trying to get a break. You want to run away, always trying to get off. Absolutely not. You may not go. And even more so, I'm going to make sure you stay up. You're going to do guard duty tonight, so you won't be free for a moment the entire night." Even though it wasn't his turn, he made him be the guard. And not only that, but he hired a second soldier to guard him, to make sure that he wouldn't sneak away to go to sukkah that night, which was really not the right thing to do, not a nice thing to do at all. You clearly don't need two guards staying up all night. But that's what happened. This one Jewish soldier was being watched by the other Jewish soldier, and he wasn't allowed to leave. But he was staying up all night guarding, and the other soldier who was supposed to watch him fell asleep. He realized, now it's my chance. And he ran off. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. And he ran to the city, and he knocked on someone's door in the middle of the night. He said, "Please, can I have one roll of bread and eat in your sukkah?" And they said, "Of course." They gave him a loaf of bread. And he went. He said, "Hamotzi." He said, "Atle sheba sukkah." And he did the mitzvah. He benched. And he ran back to the post. And the other soldier was still sleeping. So he knew he got away with it. He woke him up. He said, "Oh, you fell asleep at the job. You're going to get in trouble." And the guy said, no, don't tell. So he didn't say anything. And the soldier got away with it. And he told the Slonim Rebbe, "This is the amazing mitzvah that I did that I'm sure my face is glowing from." And the Slonim Rebbe looked at him. And he said, "No. That's a great mitzvah, but that would not cause your face to glow like this. There must be something else you did." And the man said, "Okay, there's one more thing. I'll tell you, but don't tell anyone else." And I guess I don't know how we heard about this story. It must have gotten out. But he said, "I'll tell you, there's one more thing after this story." He said, "The next day, I was so excited, the fact that I got to do the mitzvah, when I went back to the barracks and there was nobody looking, and there was nobody around, I started dancing around the barracks because I was so excited that I got away with my plan and I was able to do this mitzvah for the sake of Hashem." And the Slonim Rebbe looked at him and said, "That's why your face is glowing. Because not only did you do the mitzvah and you worked so hard to do the mitzvah, but you did it with such excitement and such love and you danced afterwards. Just as David HaMelech danced to show how much he loved the Torah, and just how much we dance on Hoshana Rabbah around the shul to show our connection to Hashem and the Torah and everything that it represents, dancing around the Aron, dancing around the Ark, and the beam of the Shulchan where we read from the Torah, our connection to Torah." And one last idea about dancing. When you think about dancing, we're just jumping up and down. There's really a lot of up movements and down movements. And what is that representing to us in Hashem? Is that we're showing Hashem that when I jump up, Hashem, you're going to take me back down. If I go down, Hashem, you're going to bring me back up. There's always a place that Hashem wants me to go, and He's directing me. I'll go one way, but then He'll bring me back the other way. And we go through this dance, this orchestra, where we as a community together dance on Hoshana Rabbah, and we go into Simchas Torah. Again, dancing with the Torah. Because that's the concept of dancing, the concept of showing ourselves and showing the world how meaningful the Torah and the mitzvahs are to us, how meaningful it was for this one soldier to do that mitzvah, how meaningful it was for David HaMelech to dance in front of the Torah. And we should have this opportunity when we're dancing in Simchas Torah and in Hoshana Rabbah to think about what dancing means, that I want Hashem to pull me in the direction He wants me to go, and together myself and the entire community will move to the sound of the music, to the beat of the drum, that we all march together in following the ways of Hashem. Have a wonderful Yontav and a Chag Sameach and a good new year.
Shalom Aleichem, this is Ari Tennant. This week, I'd like to take the opportunity to discuss the topic of Yeshiva Sukkah B'Shmini Atzeres, to discuss the differences between the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah during Sukkos and the obligation of Yeshiva Sukkah B'Shmini Atzeres, to discuss the parameters of it, how it works exactly, the finer details of the obligation, and how the minhag of Klal Yisrael came to be the way it is today. So let's begin. The Gemara in Sukkah Mem Zayin Amud Aleph has our question. The Gemara wants to know if Yeshiva Sukkah B'Shmini Atzeres would be similar to the same concept of keeping 2 days of Yom Tov. It's not the topic of our conversation today to discuss why we keep 2 days of Yom Tov, but in short, it used to be that there were 2 days of Yom Tov out of an authentic suffix, a doubt of which day was Yom Tov. It could be yesterday was Yom Tov, it could be today was Yom Tov. So the minhag was to keep 2 days of Yom Tov, and we continue that minhag today. Now, the Gemara is asking, back in the time when it truly was a doubt which day of Yom Tov we were going to keep, the first day or the second day, whatever it was, so too, we have a doubt whether or not Sukkos, the last day of Sukkos that is, Hoshana Rabba, is going to continue into what we call Shemini Atzeres. So, there are going to be a lot of practical differences that come out of this. First of all, in the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah, are we supposed to dwell in the Sukkah on Shemini Atzeres just like we do during Sukkos? After all, it could be Sukkos today. And second of all, what about benching Lulav? If we're obligated to bench Lulav and Sukkos, and maybe today's Sukkos, maybe we should bench Lulav today. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara only asks about Sukkah. It doesn't ask anything about the mitzvah of Lulav. Why not? So Tosfos addresses this question. He says the reason that Chazal never thought to, or even considered, to obligate us to bench Lulav on Shemini Atzeres is because a Lulav is muksa. What does that mean? A Lulav you're not going to pick up except for the mitzvah of Lulav. When it's not Sukkos, you're not picking it up. You're not going to use it on Shabbos. It would be no different than picking up a random tree branch or a rock on Shabbos. So therefore, we have a doubt that really is not ideal either way. Either it's Sukkos and we have to bench Lulav, but if it's not Sukkos, then it's usher to bench Lulav. You can't take the Lulav because it's muksa. So since that's the case, either it bench the Lulav now or not use the Lulav, Chazal decided that just because of a suffix, we're not going to obligate you to bench Lulav. After all, benching Lulav when it's not the first day of Yom Tov is a Durabanan anyway. So to obligate you to bench Lulav when it could be you're over another Isser Durabanan, Chazal did not feel them necessary to obligate us. Now, why is it a question whether or not we should dwell in the Sukkah on Shemini Atzeres? That's because Tosfos explain that dwelling in a Sukkah could actually be done when it's not Yom Tov, not Shabbos. It could be very ideal and very enjoyable for somebody to go outside and eat, to go into a gazebo, perhaps, or somewhere outdoors, a patio, and eat. So if that's the case, it's not a zilzul, it's called a cheapening, a disgrace of Yom Tov to dwell in the Sukkah. It could be very enjoyable. And not something you would only do in a mundane sense, like picking up a tree branch on Shabbos, which is forbidden because of the prohibitions of muksa. Now, the Gemara has a back and forth, a whole discussion, whether or not we should, first of all, dwell in the Sukkah on Shemini Atzeres, and second of all, do you make a bracha? Do you say Leishei Basukkah during Shemini Atzeres? The Gemara concludes, Meisav Yasvinon, Bruch Elam Avarchinon. That's the halacha, it says, Hilchasa, that we do dwell in the Sukkah, but we do not make a bracha on dwelling in the Sukkah. Why? You could dwell in the Sukkah because it might be Sukkos. And it's not a disgrace to Shemini Atzeres to sit in a Sukkah. It's a normal thing to do anyway, to sit in a comfortable place. But we don't make a bracha on the Sukkah because if it's not Sukkos, it's a bracha levatala. That is what the Gemara concludes. Now, the question is, what are the parameters of this obligation? Is it the same as Sukkos? During Sukkos, one is obligated to eat in the Sukkah, to sleep in the Sukkah, to do everything he can to stay in the Sukkah. Even to learn in the Sukkah is ideal. Now, in Shemini Atzeres is actually a little different. Let's start with eating in the Sukkah. Eating in the Sukkah, Chazal only obligate us to eat things that you would have to say, if it were Sukkos, Leishei Basukkah on. The concept essentially is that other things that we not to say Leishei Basukkah on, for example, drinking water, eating fruit, or even just spending time dwelling in the Sukkah just for the sake of spending time in the Sukkah, are only chumras, are only ways of us to be strict in ourselves, to raise the level a little higher of Kedusha during Sukkos. But Shemini Atzeres, since it's only a doubt whether I even have to be in the Sukkah, there's no obligation actually to eat fruits, for example, or drink water in the Sukkah. Now, interestingly enough, we'll see by the end, it could be it's even usher. But we'll hold off on that for now. We'll come back to that shortly. That is the essential obligation of eating in the Sukkah on Shemini Atzeres. That is what the poskim say. The Torah says, Ochlim b'sukkah b'layla v'yom. The Shulchan Aruch brings down, we eat in the Sukkah, Ochlim b'sukkah b'layla v'yom. The poskim over there don't discuss any idea of not eating in the sukkah during Shmini Atzeres. However, the Torah does bring down there were some that were nohag to only eat in the sukkah for one of the meals, but only go during the daytime. And he says it's not a minig. Now, you may have noticed that there are some people that either don't eat the sukkah at all in Shmini Atzeres, or there are some other minhagim, some people only make kiddush in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres, but don't eat in the sukkah. These minhagim are not truly brought in postgame. They're really not in Shulchan Aruch. They're not in Mishnah Berurah and Aruch HaShulchan. They're really not discussed. So there is a couple ideas as far as where these minhagim came from. One idea is that it could be that back in Europe, in places that were very, very cold, some people just didn't go in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres because it was so cold and it was just unnecessary to be there, thought that was actually the halacha that became the minhag, that since, well, we haven't sat in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres in years because it's so cold outside, we're not going to do that. That is truly the halacha, that if it's cold on Shmini Atzeres, it's much more lenient, much more makel than it would be during sukkahs. If you're a little bothered, a little uncomfortable during sukkahs, you really should stay in the sukkah. But in Shmini Atzeres, we're not as machmir, it's okay to step out if it's a little uncomfortable, it's a little wet, or anything of that nature. But the postgame nowadays say that this reasoning doesn't really apply anymore. I mean, in Chicago, or for sure if you live somewhere like Miami or Los Angeles, Texas or wherever, it's not going to be so uncomfortable at all. It might be hot, but it's not in the same category as living in far north Europe where it's freezing. So there really is no basis for these minhagim. Now, if this is your family minhag and you haven't eaten in the sukkah your entire life in Shmini Atzeres, my advice to you would be to call your rav right now. It's definitely worth it. You might be surprised what he says. Now, if you have an awkward situation, let's say you are going to eat in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres because that is what Shulchan Aruch brings down, that is the basic halacha, but there's family coming over, whoever, that doesn't eat in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres, like I said, these are definitely shilas that are important to ask to call your rav, prevent any kind of machlokas, and maintain shalom. Now, that's eating in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. What about sleeping in the sukkah? Now, sleeping in the sukkah is a little different than eating in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. Now, the reason that it's a little different is because there's one opinion from the Mordechai, it's brought by the Rav Yah, that says that it's actually usher to sleep in the sukkah in Shmini Atzeres. Why is it usher to sleep in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres? After all, the Gemara just said, Mesav Yasvinan, we dwell in the sukkah. It didn't say only eat in the sukkah, it said to dwell in the sukkah. Part of dwelling in the sukkah is sleeping in the sukkah. So the reason that he gives is because it's nira kebal tosif, which means it looks like you're adding onto the mitzvah, which is action isur d'oraisa. You're not really adding onto the mitzvah, but it looks like it. In order to really add onto a mitzvah, you have to do it purposely, with intent. You have to actually intend on adding, for example, a fifth species to your bundle of arba minim, to your lulav bundle. You have to add another set of parshios to your tefillin instead of just having four. That would be real bal tosif. Over here, that's not your intent. Your only intent over here is to avoid this suffix, this doubt, well, maybe it's still sukkahs. Hoshana Rabbah was just yesterday. It could be that it's still sukkahs today. It could be one day off. So that's why he says one shouldn't sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. The Rav Yah actually says it's usher out of concern, you know, that it looks like Baal Tosef. Now, what's the difference between eating in the sukkah and sleeping in the sukkah according to Rav Yah, that for some reason eating doesn't look like Baal Tosef, but sleeping does? That's because when you eat, you normally say Leishir Basukkah during sukkahs. And now you're not going to say Leishir Basukkah, so it looks different. That's called a hecker. You can recognize the difference. It's noticeable that you're not saying a bracha, Leishir Basukkah. But by sleeping, you don't make a bracha, Leishir Basukkah. Since you're not making a bracha, it looks absolutely no different than sukkahs. It looks like you're adding on a day to the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah, which is really only 7 days in the Torah. Okay, now most postgame actually disagree with the Rav Yah, namely the Vilna Gaon. If you look in the Sefer Maisa Rav, which brings down all the customs, the minhagim of the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon was extremely machmir to sleep in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres, even when it was freezing. Even if he would have been putter during sukkahs, he would still sleep in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres because he didn't want people to see it and say, well, you see, you don't have to sleep in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. The Vilna Gaon didn't. Most poskim do say this. All that being said, the interesting thing is that the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch, the way they describe the mitzvah Yeshiva Sukkah and Shmini Atzeres, they say Ochlim B'Sukkah. Both of them. It's very interesting. Even though the Beis Yosef himself, the author of the Shulchan Aruch and his commentary on the Tur, brings down that the basic idea the Gemara is telling us, Mesav Yasvinan, to dwell in the Sukkah, includes sleeping. There's no differentiation the Gemara makes. It just asks, is there a mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah during Shmini Atzeres? Well, since sleeping in the Sukkah is part of the mitzvah of Yeshiva Sukkah, there's no reason you shouldn't be sleeping in the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres. All that being said, the Magen Avraham does bring down this Rav Yah. The Mishnah Berurah also brings down the Rav Yah that says that it's actually usher to sleep in the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres. So this is going to be a little different. Eating in a sukkah, everyone agreed. If it's a food that you're obligated to say leishiv b'sukkah on, you have to eat in the sukkah shmini atzeres. There's really no opinion that says not to. But sleeping, it's a bit different. The question is, it could actually be usher to sleep in the sukkah. So since there is one opinion that says it's usher, the Mishnah brings down that the minhag, the custom of Klal Yisrael, is to be lenient and not sleep in the sukkah shmini atzeres. Now, if you want to be machmer, if you want to sleep with the sukkah shmini atzeres, seemingly you could. Most poskim say you should. The basic wording of the Gemara says that you should, without having to get into explanations and deeper ideas of what the Gemara means, seems to say that you're supposed to sleep in the sukkah. But since the Lashon, the wording of the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah seem to indicate otherwise, the Magid Avraham brings down the reveal that it's actually usher. So the minhag is to be mekel, not to sleep in the sukkah shmini atzeres. In summary, we've discussed that one is obligated to eat in the sukkah and shmini atzeres. Anything that he would have said leishiv b'sukkah during the Chag of Sukkot, that would mean for sure the two Yom Tov meals. And if he happens to eat another meal, or be koveya suda, let's call, on mizonos, for example, cakes, if he eats a lot of cake or anything like that, pretzels, like he would have said leishiv b'sukkah, he would have to have that in the sukkah. One is not obligated to drink water and fruits inside the sukkah. It could be that's usher, because the same Rav Yah that's saying there's no heker over there, you don't say leishiv b'sukkah by those. Even though, generally speaking, the minhag is to be mekel, you don't have to leave the sukkah if you're drinking water, but you certainly don't have to be in the sukkah either. And sleeping, the minhag is to be mekel, not to sleep with the sukkah, but if one wanted to be machmir, he could. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good Yom Tov.
Thank you for listening. Feel free to learn about all the programs that the Skokie Community Cola has to offer. For any questions, suggestions, or to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, please email us at info@skokiekolo.org.